So I guess I will get started with our Dharma talk for this morning. And as I said before, I didn't really expect to be doing a second talk on this picture this week, but things kind of turned out that way. And now that I'm doing it, I find that I'm actually glad I had this opportunity because it's as I was preparing, it forced me to really think more deeply about this picture and this Oxfording series. And as I mentioned before, I'd like to take some time to explore a little more deeply this theme of form and emptiness that's coming up in these pictures. And it does feel like something of a stretch for me to talk about this. So if it feels like a stretch for you also, you're not the only one. But I think sometimes that kind of stretch is good for us, to investigate and think about things that we don't feel like we fully understand. And I know that in Tim's Monday night talks, he's been willing to kind of go there out into the deep end a little bit, and that made me feel more comfortable in the sense that this would be a good thing to do for our Sunday sit too, before we move on next month to the picture where we're returning back into the world. Now, so far this month, we've approached this ninth picture in ways that maybe might make it feel a little bit more approachable. For example, Jerry, in the first talk of the month, he gave a really nice talk about where he acknowledged how confusing and mysterious this picture, and really many of these pictures can be, especially the last couple of them. But brought it back to the importance of connection and how the practice doesn't end with emptiness, but comes back to form, to interconnection and caring for each other. And last week I talked about how our connection with nature can help us to see and understand some of these Dharma truths about form and emptiness and kind of make that transition from emptiness to form, in a way that maybe it's easier for us to understand. And well, it's certainly true, as Martine Batchelor says, one of our most favorite commentaries on this series, that the practice doesn't end with emptiness. It's important to acknowledge, too, that these understandings are a critical part of the practice. So we don't want to get lost in the emptiness, but we don't want to rush back into form too quickly either. And we talked earlier this year about how we can be so eager to get on to the next picture that we don't fully honor the place where the Oxherder actually is in the picture we're studying. And I think this can be true here too for this ninth picture. We're really eager to get on to picture 10 where we return again to the world. So we don't really give our full attention to the formless and this kind of gradual moving back. And of course, no question that engaging with the world with kindness and generosity is a huge part of the practice, a really important part of the practice. But it isn't only that engagement and the deep truths and the mystery are part of the practice too, an essential part. So we need to be willing to kind of hang in there with those teachings, even when they feel confusing. And to have faith that what we don't understand will be understood and what has not seen will be seen, all in good time. And we mentioned before that one of the things that might make these Oxfording pictures difficult is their roots in the Zen tradition, which isn't so familiar to many of us. And as I've been preparing this talk, I've been lucky enough to come across several things that have really helped me to see the connection between these kind of esoteric and mysterious Zen Oxfording pictures and what we learn in our own Vipassana Theravada tradition. So I'm going to share some of this with you today, and I hope it might help you the way it has helped me to put the ox herding pictures and these teachings from them into a frame of reference that maybe is more familiar. So the first thing that helped me is the class that Susan and I are going to be doing on the five aggregates this Wednesday for the Buddhist Essentials series. And this teaching is about the components that come together to create the self and the way that the self arises and falls apart with every contact. So it's really a lot about form and emptiness and form. And then there's a series of talks that our founding teacher, Rodney Smith, gave last year at the Forest Refuge in Barre, Massachusetts, on integrating the Heart Sutra from the Zen and Mahayana tradition with the discourse on the four foundations of mindfulness, which is such an important talk about how to practice in our tradition. And these talks that Rodney gave are available on Dharma Seed if you'd like to listen to them yourself, and you might find that they really have a nice connection with the ox herding pictures. And then, as usual, the different commentators that we've looked at have good things to say, instructive things to say about this sort of transition from emptiness to form and form to emptiness. So I'm going to bring these different threads in, and I hope that what I say will make sense and that I'm not biting off more than I can really chew here in talking about these things. So I'd like to start by sharing the last few pictures so we can put this picture 9 a little bit more in context. So I will do our screen share here. Take me a minute or so to get this up. Okay, is it showing up? Good. Okay, so sorry for the delay. I should have had this prepared, but many things to think about. So I want to start with picture number 7, where we have the ox herder is there in his hut. He's done all of this searching and journeying and all of this kind of thing, but is now in a peaceful place, just seeing what arises and passes. And yet he's still very much there, knowing that, or feeling that he is there seeing everything. Then we move on to picture 8, where both self and ox are forgotten. And here is this picture where there's total emptiness. There's no form. There's no nature world there. There's no ox. There's no ox herder. Everything merges into no thing. As the poem says, all merge into no thing. And then we move on from there to today's picture, return to the origin, back to the source. So here we have coming back to a sense of form, the forms of nature, and in a way, you know, returning from self to not self and back to a sort of not quite back to self, really, maybe to a sense of self that is different from the sense of self that we had earlier, before this recognition of the emptiness. So that sort of puts these in context a little bit, and I'll stop the sharing then. So we kind of see this sense of coming from a world of form into emptiness and formlessness, and then beginning this journey back again, but maybe seeing things through a different lens. So how can we make sense of these pictures and these teachings? They are pretty mysterious in in many ways. And there's not a lot of real clear concrete explanation in the Oxfording pictures. We have the picture, we have the poem. Well, to talk about it, I think I'll first start with some of the thoughts of the commentators. Now, one of the commentators I looked at in the Three Pillars of Zen emphasizes how we can understand form and emptiness through understanding impermanence and change. And so here the commentary describes the Oxherder in this way. It says, he observed the waxing and waning of life in the world while abiding in a state of unshakable serenity. Alone with himself, he observed things endlessly changing. So as we move from this picture 8 of emptiness into picture 9, where we're coming back into form, there's this sense that the form itself isn't solid. Its very nature is to change. And then the commentary goes on to also say, this waxing and waning is no phantom or illusion, but a manifestation of the source. So we get from that, you know, to me, this sense that the emptiness isn't the whole story and the form isn't the whole story. So the teaching isn't saying that everything is just an illusion and nothing really matters, as we might be tempted to think when we sometimes hear about emptiness, but more that this waxing and waning and shifting from emptiness to form and back again, this itself is the way things are, and all of this is manifestations of the source, or whatever, the deep truth beneath everything, you might say. It's hard to know even how to define that. And so we start to understand something about that through understanding change and impermanence. And this sense of change and impermanence is something that's very familiar to all of us in our own tradition, and that we talk about a lot, we hear about a lot. So this sort of connects this with these Zen Oxherding pictures. And in his book, Riding the Ox Home, John Dido Laurie talks about the same thing in a slightly different way. And he quotes from another commentator, an anonymous commentator, who says, from the beginning, the truth is clear. Poised in silence, I observe the forms of integration and disintegration. The water is emerald, the mountain is indigo. I see that which is creating and that which is destroying. So in slightly different words, once again, we see this impermanence of all things, but interdependence of all things too. This integration and disintegration together in tandem. So in this ninth picture, we see there's a return to form, but a new understanding of form, understanding its impermanence, its changeability. The commentator also says, one who is not attached to form need not be reformed. And this is a really interesting thing, I think, to point out in reference to this picture. And it's reflected in the fact that in this ninth picture, the Oxherder is not there. So we return to the world of form and the world of our conventional self in a way, but it's different. I mean, you know, there's this feeling that, you know, maybe that sense of self might still arise, but we've seen its insubstantiality. We know that we aren't the solid, permanent self we had assumed we were before. And so, in a way, we're not really quite reformed in the same way as we were before. And maybe that is sort of shown in the fact that that Oxherder is not there yet. So when we read these commentaries, we can see how much this understanding of form and emptiness is the same kind of understanding we come to in our tradition when we understand the truths of the three characteristics and look at anicca or impermanence and anatta or not self and then dukkha or unsatisfactoriness. So these pictures are not really that far from our own tradition, not at all. It's really just a matter of seeing the connection. And this leads me to the next strand of this talk, the Heart Sutra and Rodney Smith's talk about its relationship with the Satipatthana Sutra. And I have a feeling I might have a kind of a long talk, but that's okay. It might go a bit longer than expected. So the Heart Sutra is one of the most important discourses in the Mahayana tradition, you know, in the Zen tradition. And maybe it's one that really captures this sense of what this pictures 8 and 9 are pointing to. And I'm not going to read the whole thing because it would be just, you know, too much to work with in this talk. And I don't know that I understand it enough to even talk about the whole thing. But a couple of the key phrases that begin it are, the bodhisattva of compassion, when he meditated deeply, saw the emptiness of all 5 skandhas. The 5 skandhas are the 5 aggregates. And sundered the bonds that caused him suffering. Here then, form is no other than emptiness. Emptiness no other than form. Form is only emptiness. Emptiness only form. That really famous part of this sutra. So what Rodney says, or one of the things he says in this talk, is that with the Heart Sutra in the Mahayana tradition, the Zen tradition, and in the Oxfording pictures, we get this beautiful vision of emptiness and this ultimate wisdom where the practice is leading us. But we don't get much of a sense of how to get there. You know, like in the Oxfording pictures, this emptiness is somehow realized by the Oxforder, but how he or she gets there, it's kind of not really clear. It sort of happens, and then they kind of go back, and it's a little hard to really know what's going on. But Rodney says that in the discourse on the 4 foundations of mindfulness, there we get instructions on how to practice to actually realize this beautiful vision that's given in the Heart Sutra. So the vision of where we're going isn't articulated with so much beauty and poetry in the Satipatthana Sutra as in the Heart Sutra, but the instructions about how to practice are right there and very clear. So if we work with both of them, we can get the inspiring vision from the Heart Sutra and get the practice instructions that lead us there in the Satipatthana Sutta. And so when I heard this in his talk, I thought, you know, wow, you know, this is just what we need to be thinking about to help us build this bridge between the Zen tradition and the Oxfording pictures and our own Vipassana, Theravada tradition, so we can really learn from both of them and take both of them together and enrich our practice that way. And so just as a reminder for those of you who may not know or have kind of forgotten, the 4 foundations of mindfulness are the body, feeling tone, which is pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral, mental formations, and dhammas, which are like truths of the Buddha's teachings. And in his talks, Rodney talks about how when we explore the 1st foundation of the body, we start to see how our solid sense of the body that we identify so strongly with falls apart with mindful attention into nothing but a swirl of changing sensations, as we looked at in our guided meditation. And he also talks about how in the 2nd and 3rd foundations, feeling and mental formations, we can see how we take the feeling tone of an object, you know, our finding it pleasant or unpleasant, and create a whole story about it and create our need to have it, or maybe to get rid of it if it's unpleasant, and who will be when we get it or get rid of it. So we really create something out of nothing. And in our own meditation practice, we can see these processes going on. Form to emptiness when we look at the body, emptiness to form when we look at our mental processes. And I was also really struck by the way the Heart Sutra begins. It says, the Bodhisattva of compassion, when he meditated deeply, saw the emptiness of all five skandhas and surrendered the bonds that caused him suffering. So here we see how this teaching on emptiness, how the entry point really is the investigation of these five aggregates. So it's basically saying that we understand emptiness through our investigation into these aggregates that come together to form the sense of self. And we understand the emptiness because we see the insubstantiality of self. So we're really going back to very basic teachings. And as I said before, Susan and I are going to be doing a talk on the five aggregates this Wednesday as part of a Buddhist Essentials class. And, you know, when we started our planning, I didn't really think about this being related to the Oxford in pictures that much. But now I can really see how closely related these teachings are. And the Oxfording pictures don't really talk about the aggregates. They talk about, sort of talk about emptiness and form. And yet the teachings of the five aggregates are really a perfect example of emptiness and form. You know, how these aggregates of form, feeling, perception, mental formations, consciousness, I can't talk about this in detail because it's too much for today, but this sense that all these things come together to form a sense of self and then they fall apart and form a new sense of self when we contact a new object. So we're always, you know, forming and falling apart, forming and falling apart. It's just not that stable. And this can all sound very theoretical, but, you know, as we talked about last week, we can begin to get a sense of emptiness and form and the relationship between them when we look at the changing seasons, cycles of birth and death in nature, in our own lives too, because we always are seeing things arising and passing, the wax and wane of life, integration and disintegration. And as we bring mindful attention to our own mental processes, you know, in this way that we do when we meditate on the body, on our thoughts, our minds, our feeling tone, we begin to see the shift from form to emptiness and emptiness to form in ourselves. So these teachings are really related, and we can kind of begin to investigate and see how it isn't, well, it's mysterious, and yet there are many doorways in that maybe make it easier to understand. And having this understanding of this sense of emptiness and form, self and not self, is really important. In fact, vital to our awakening. Near its close, the Heart Sutra says, so know that the Bodhisattva, holding to nothing whatever, but dwelling in prajna wisdom, and meaning this wisdom of understanding emptiness and form, is freed of delusive hindrance, rid of the fear bred by it, and reaches clearest nirvana. So that has a sense of how crucial these teachings are, you know, pathway to the ultimate freedom. So, form and emptiness. And, you know, these ideas are difficult and subtle and not an understanding that comes easily and not something that we can force, not something that we can really think our way into either. Though we would like to believe that was possible sometimes. But we can have a sense that this is where we're headed in the practice. And we can be willing to just, you know, show up and look, apply our meditation techniques to our own experiences of body and mind. And, you know, little by little, we come to see and understand more deeply their impermanence, their insubstantiality, this emptiness and form. You know, as one of my teachers, Kamala Masters, said at a retreat I went on with her, you know, that, you know, sometimes there's a big opening where we see something about impermanence or not self. But also, as we practice, we see it in all these tiny little ways, and it just sort of seeps in. It seeps in to a place where we really know for ourselves, yes, this is true. And it's a very gradual seeping in. And even if we have a big understanding, we still need the seeping in. So, you know, it's something that we really get to over time. And also in this connection, it's also very important that when we feel like we don't understand these things, we can just be open to the mystery. Open to the mystery of what has not been seen. So let's sit together for a moment. The Bodhisattva of compassion, when he meditated deeply, saw the emptiness of all five skandhas and surrendered the bonds that caused him suffering. Here then, form is no other than emptiness. Emptiness, no other than form. Form is only emptiness. Emptiness, only form. So thank you, everybody, for listening. I have a feeling that I maybe put all kinds of things in there, things that were kind of coming together in my mind that I wanted to share, but hopefully it's not too much or too confusing. I'm not sure, but anyhow. So now we have some time for small group discussion. And for those of you who aren't able to stay this morning, hi, well, welcome back, everybody. You all kind of whoosh, and there you are. So now we have some time for sharing in our larger group. So if anyone would like to talk about maybe what you discussed in your group, or if you have any questions or your own insights, anything like that, you're most welcome to bring these things up. If you want to, you can use your little reaction, your little raise hand. Oops. Your little raise hand icon, or you can also just kind of raise your physical hand and unmute yourself. There aren't too many of us, so I think it will be pretty easy to see who would like to talk. So the floor is open. You're welcome to comment, say question, anything you would like to share. Oh, yes, Carol. Oh, you're muted. Carol, you're muted.
Yeah. I just wanted to thank you for
Yeah.
your talk, and there are many things to ponder. And our group really appreciated it. So just wanted to thank you.
Good. I'm glad. As I was going along, I started to think, oh my gosh, there's so much stuff in here, but it does give. It gave me a lot to ponder. Seeing these connections. So I'm glad it gave you guys a lot to ponder too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we have at least one student from Seattle University who's joining us, taking a class on Buddhism. And
wow.
It's been, we really appreciate that perspective as well.
Yeah. That's really good because sometimes seeing all of these different traditions and the academics part of it, helps to understand. Let's see. Julie, did you raise your hand? Oh, and then there's another one. Let's see. Lillian and Nikhil have their hand raised too. So please go ahead.
Thanks, Lyndall, for the talk. I just noticed as I was kind of processing what we talked about in our group, I think I'm noticing like a shading of like value judgment. Like form is good. I like form. That's the good one. That's where we're living. We're like doing the things we love. We're here in a grounded reality. Emptiness, that's the bad one. So I just was like kind of noticing that that coming into my mind, and just wondering if you have any ideas to add for how I practice with that.
Oh, well, I thank you for bringing that up, because a lot of times we don't want to be that upfront about saying that, because you know, emptiness is supposed to be where we're heading and all this. But what you say is so true. Form is where we live. And form is what is familiar. So I know for myself personally in my practice, I do find that when I start to get too close to the emptiness or the formlessness or to the not self, there's a part of me that is afraid, and it kind of comes up. You know, there's a part of the mind that's like, no. You don't want to go there. Don't want to go there, you know. And so that's something that I have had to deal with in my practice, too, is that an instinctive part of us that feels like that reality is a little bit too scary and too threatening to be with. And I think it just takes time for that part of our mind or instinct that is afraid of it to get less afraid. So thank you for bringing that up. I mean, I feel like that is something that is really a part of this process, and it's good to acknowledge that it's part of the process too, and not feel like there's something wrong with us if we have those feelings. Because I sure do, and I think we all do. So thank you. Let's see, Janet.
Our group talked about your use of the word disintegrate and integrate. And I think for me, it kind of helps against the fear of the emptiness to experience that things disintegrate, but then they reintegrate. And it's not exactly the same situation that has reintegrated. It's, you know, it's impermanent, but it's not just totally off the wall that you lose yourself in that self. And the things that you remember that you relied upon are no longer available.
Yeah, that's a really good comment. And I'm glad that those words are helpful. That sort of was a helpful image for me too. And I feel too, like just exactly as you say, one of the things, important understandings is that it isn't just nothingness, but this process of forming and unforming and forming a little differently and unforming. And yeah, there is something that's a little bit less scary about that. Some of the scariness of emptiness is a sort of a association, at least for me, that it has with death and with just not being when it comes to myself, just totally disintegrating and that's it. And so the sense of forming and reforming is helpful. Good. I'm glad that was helpful. And I mean, all of these things are ways that kind of help us to get our heads around and our hearts around these understandings. So thank you. Oh, yes, Malia.
Hi, I'm Malia. I'm the student who goes to Seattle University.
Oh, cool.
Taking a class on like mindfulness and meditation and Buddhism. And so our teacher like told us about these classes that we could attend on Zoom. So I really enjoyed, I don't know a lot about this stuff, but I've been really enjoyed listening to you today and just learning. And one thing that really stuck out to me was about like form and emptiness and how we can come back in form with new perspectives and how that correlates with impermanence. And so I really enjoyed listening today. So thank you.
Oh, well, thank you. And thank you for being here and for speaking up too. And I hope you'll come back. And I think we'd all be really interested to know, you know, sort of more about what you're learning in your class and how it fits in with what we're talking about in our practice. There's so many different ways to do this practice, and yet there's this core that's common to all the traditions. So yeah, I'm glad it was helpful and interesting, and thank you. Okay, well, maybe it's time for us to end our discussion time, since it's almost 11:30, and for me to go ahead and talk a little bit about some of the upcoming things at SAMHSA.